Welcome to the Pitcott Podcast. I'm your host, Bill Pitcott, and sitting right across from me, ready to unpack all of this, is our resident expert, Annabelle Pitcott. We are just absolutely thrilled to have you here today.
To be on thrilled. It is going to be a fantastic deep dive today.
It really is. And, you know, the incredible information we are about to get into comes directly from the bestseller ebooks on our ebook store. So visit www.pitcott.com/books to download.
Right. Highly recommend checking that out.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But before we get completely lost in today's material, we have a really quick favor to ask you. Please subscribe to our channel if you haven't. Activate the notification bell so you don't miss our new uploads. And don't forget to click on the stars below to give us a rating. We appreciate you giving us a 5-star rating to propel this podcast to help others too.
Yeah, it seriously makes a massive difference for us. And, you know, the journey we have ahead of us today it's genuinely transformative.
Oh, without a doubt. Because today, we are tackling this kind of million-dollar question, right? Like, yep. Why do 90% of blogs fail in their very first year while this tiny dedicated fraction managed to turn what is basically a weekend writing hobby into a massive, influential, income-generating digital empire?
It is the ultimate question, really.
Right. So to find the answer, our mission for this deep dive is an unabridged, totally exhaustive breakdown of Pitcott's The Professional Blogger's Blueprint, 24 Pillars of Success. And I got to tell you, I was poring over this blueprint last night, and I am just buzzing with the sheer scale of the digital leverage it reveals. I mean, it fundamentally changes how you look at online creation.
Well, yeah, it's a remarkable blueprint because it really strips away all the noise. You know, the foundational infrastructure of a successful digital presence is, well, it's where so many incredibly talented writers get hopelessly stuck.
Stuck before they even publish their first word, usually.
Exactly. And the source points out a very strategic progression here. It says you must start entirely on a free hosting platform like Blogger or WordPress before you do anything else.
Okay, wait, I have to push back on that immediately because if I'm trying to build this professional empire, doesn't a free site just make me look like a total amateur?
Yeah.
Like, why wouldn't I want the premium themes and all those custom plugins right out of the gate?
Yeah, I mean, that is a super common trap. But the reasoning here is really rooted in cognitive bandwidth.
Cognitive bandwidth.
Right. When you're just starting, you only have a finite amount of creative energy. You know, if you spend your entire first month wrestling with DNS settings or server configurations and broken plugins.
The broken plugins are the worst.
They really are. But if you do that, you deplete the exact willpower you need to actually find your voice and write. So by using a free platform, you basically eliminate all that technical friction.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you're essentially forced to focus 100% of your energy on the actual content. You know, you write your first 10 posts, you see what resonates with the market, and you build your confidence without any of that underlying financial pressure.
I see. So it's really about isolating the variable. Right. Kind of reminds me of a pop-up shop analogy.
Oh, I like that. How so?
Well, it's like you're opening a weekend pop-up shop to prove people actually want your product before you go out and sign this terrifying 10-year lease on a brick-and-mortar storefront.
Hmm.
I mean, why buy the expensive custom shelving before you even know if foot traffic exists in that neighborhood?
Yeah, that is exactly it. Perfect analogy. And once you have proven that concept at your pop-up shop, the blueprint outlines this sort of psychological shift. That is when you invest.
Big upgrade.
Right. Upgrading to a personalized domain and custom hosting, it's no longer a blind risk at that point. It becomes a calculated investment. You are planting a permanent digital flag.
Planting the flag, yeah.
Exactly. It creates immense credibility and gives you total architectural control over your long-term growth. It signals to your audience and frankly to yourself that you have crossed that threshold from just a hobbyist to a professional.
I really love that concept of the digital flag. But what exactly are we planting it in? Because the Pitcott source talks heavily about finding your niche and the absolute necessity of staying fiercely on topic.
Oh, yes. The niche is everything.
It makes this strong argument that a narrow niche beats a broad one every single time. But so, why is a hyper-specific blog like, say, Vegan Recipes for Busy Professionals
yeah.
so much more powerful than just a beautifully written general blog about food? I mean, doesn't narrowing the niche like that severely limit your potential audience size?
It definitely seems counterintuitive at first, but in digital ecosystems, specificity is the ultimate magnet.
The ultimate magnet, okay.
Right, because if you write generally about food, you're actively choosing to compete against every massive culinary magazine, every celebrity chef, and those multi-million dollar recipe syndicates.
Yeah, you're just getting buried at that point.
Exactly. Your voice is a drop in an endless ocean. However, vegan recipes for busy professionals solves a very acute, highly specific pain point for a very specific demographic.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. When that busy professional lands on your page, they feel this profound sense of relief. They feel like you engineered this entire digital space exclusively for them. And that high affinity connection, that is what drives loyalty. A rabid, engaged audience of 1,000 people is infinitely more valuable than a lukewarm audience of 100,000 who, you know, click once and leave forever.
Wow, that makes profound sense. You're building trust through that specificity. And the blueprint really emphasizes that to maintain that trust, you have to stay religiously on topic.
Yes, you cannot drift.
Like, your niche is basically a contract with your reader, right? If they subscribe for those quick 15-minute vegan meals, and suddenly next week you publish this massive essay on how to fix a car engine, you breach the contract.
Precisely. And fulfilling that contract requires you to be relentlessly informed. Information is essentially the fuel for your content engine. You really can't maintain a high level of output without a high level of input.
Right. Garbage in, garbage out, or nothing in, nothing out.
Exactly. So setting up Google alerts, curating newsletters, following industry thought leaders, it gives you an insider edge. It lets you synthesize timely insights that a casual creator would just completely miss.
Which naturally leads us to a pretty massive hurdle, I think. Let's say the site is up, the niche is locked in, and your research is flowing. But the reality of running a blog is this relentless, crushing demand for new material.
Oh, the content treadmill.
The treadmill.
Yeah.
How do creators maintain this ecosystem without completely burning out? And the Pitcod source offers a really surprising strategy here. It says to recycle old content.
Yes, recycling.
I gotta admit, when I read that, it felt a little bit like cheating. Like, I don't know, serving reheated leftovers at a fancy dinner party. Is that really a valid strategy for professional?
I always laugh at that reaction because that is exactly how most writers feel at first. It feels lazy. But it's absolutely not cheating. It's recognizing the reality of content decay.
Content decay.
Yeah. Over time, even your most brilliant posts will slowly slide down the search rankings. But updating evergreen posts with fresh data or new insights or just improved formatting, it revitalizes that asset.
Okay, so it's not just republishing the exact same thing.
No, not at all. You're polishing it. And search algorithms heavily favor freshness. An updated piece of evergreen content that already has some established authority will almost always outperform a brand new mediocre post that was just rushed out to meet a deadline.
Oh, those rushed deadlines. The blueprint actually specifically warns against panic writing, you know, staring at a blinking cursor at 11 at night because you arbitrarily promised your audience a post by midnight.
It's the worst feeling, which is why implementing a rigorous content calendar is absolutely non-negotiable. Right. A calendar transforms your blog from this reactive chore into a proactive business. You pair that consistency with a strategic volume of posts because a dormant blog loses readers very quickly.
Right. I always compare a blog's archives to a physical bookstore. Like if you walk into a bookstore and there are literally only 3 books sitting on the shelves, you're going to turn around and walk right back out.
Yeah, you'd think they were going out of business.
Exactly. You wouldn't trust them as a credible source. Mm. Volume builds that foundational credibility. But obviously, only if the books are actually readable. And this brings up a point in the Pitcod source that, well, it genuinely confused me at first.
Oh, which part?
It explicitly suggests prioritizing clarity by writing at an 8th grade reading level.
Mm.
And wait, if I am writing for, say, busy corporate professionals, won't an 8th grade reading level completely insult their intelligence?
Mm-hmm.
How do you balance sounding authoritative with sounding, you know, that simple?
That is a brilliant question. And it really comes down to a psychological concept called the fluency heuristic.
The fluency heuristic.
Yes. When people read online, they are experiencing incredibly high cognitive load. They have multiple tabs open, their phone is buzzing, they're inherently distracted.
Yeah, I'm guilty of that right now.
We all are. So if you write a dense academic thesis with these labyrinthine sentences, their brain has to work incredibly hard just to parse the grammar, let alone understand the actual concept.
Okay, so it's just exhausting for them.
Exactly. The fluency heuristic shows that when text is simple, clear, and easy to process, the reader subconsciously attributes higher intelligence and greater credibility to the author.
Wait, really?
Yes. Simplicity doesn't insult their intelligence. It actually respects their time.
Wow. So making it easy to read actually makes you look smarter to the reader.
Yeah.
That is a massive paradigm shift.
It changes everything about how you write.
And the blueprint ties this directly to how we format the text, too. It stresses that using bold text, italics, headers, bullet points, it's not just to make the page look pretty.
Right. Formatting is not decoration. It is communication. Eye-tracking studies show that digital readers follow an F pattern.
An F pattern.
Yeah. They scan horizontally across the top, then vertically down the left side, just looking for keywords that catch their eye. They do not read word for word.
Oh, I totally do that when I'm looking for a recipe, just scrolling for the ingredients.
Exactly. So strategic bullet points and bold headers act as navigational beacons. They guide the reader's eye, and that lowers the bounce rate because it assures the reader that the exact information they need is right there, effortlessly accessible.
I see. So if you just hit them with a giant unbroken wall of text, you're basically daring them to leave. And they will.
Oh, 100%. They'll click back immediately.
Okay, so let's recap where we are in this deep dive.
Mm.
We have a clear niche, an efficient content engine, and beautifully formatted writing. But this incredible digital architecture is completely useless if no one ever sees it, right?
Mm.
We have to figure out how to get eyes on the page.
The visibility phase. Very crucial.
Yes, very crucial. And before we get into the exact mechanics of search intent and traffic generation, we want to remind you to visit www.pitcott.com. Please subscribe to our channel if you haven't, and activate the notification bell so you don't miss our new uploads. Press the like button and rate us if you love our show. It helps in the recommendation algorithm so others can access it too. And don't forget to click on the stars below to give us a rating.
Thank you so much for that. So, let's tackle the real elephant in the room regarding visibility, which is SEO, or search engine optimization.
The dreaded acronym.
The dreaded acronym. But the Pitcott blueprint breaks down the core directive of incorporating keywords naturally. But it really emphasizes that SEO is ultimately about search intent.
Search intent. Yes.
Yes. When a human being types a query into a search engine, what are they actually expecting to find?
Right. It feels like we always just want to give them the right answer, but the format of the answer really matters. I kind of like to think of a search engine not as a mind reader, but as this incredibly stressed out librarian.
Okay, I like this. Go on.
Well, if someone asks the librarian for best running shoes for flat feet, and you hand them a gorgeous, poetic, 10-page essay on the ancient history of the marathon, well, it might be great writing, but the librarian is never going to recommend your book again.
That is so true.
Right. You didn't match the search intent. They wanted a quick listicle of shoes, not a history lesson.
That librarian metaphor is absolutely perfect. You have to match the structural format of the answer the searcher is anticipating. The best SEO writing does not look like SEO writing.
Oh, that's a great way to put it.
Yeah, it should sound like a highly structured, natural conversation where the keywords just fit seamlessly into the context. Because if you aggressively stuff keywords into a post to try and trick the algorithm, well, both the human readers and the search engines will heavily penalize you for it. The golden rule is always audience first, search engine second.
Audience first, search engine second. Got it. And part of putting the audience first is making sure the writing isn't just riddled with errors. The source has this phenomenal, highly practical tip for proofreading, which is to read your posts aloud.
Yes, reading aloud is a game changer.
It's amazing how your eyes will just skip over a missing word on a screen, but the second you try to actually speak the sentence, you stumble over the clunky phrasing. Typos and bad grammar completely erode that fluency we just talked about. If it sounds clunky to the ear, it is clunky on the page.
It really is.
But okay, once the writing is flawless and optimized, the blueprint shifts to retaining those readers. And here's where I did a total double take. It recommends utilizing RSS feeds. Honestly, is this 2005? Are people really still using RSS feeds?
I completely understand why it feels archaic, but yes, RSS feeds remain a highly strategic tool for capturing what we call power users.
Power users.
Yeah. These are industry curators, researchers, highly engaged professionals. They use feed aggregators to pull structured data across the web. You never want to cut off a segment of your most dedicated audience just because the technology isn't mainstream on TikTok or Instagram.
Ah, I hadn't thought about it like that.
Right. Offering RSS alongside modern email newsletters ensures you're casting the widest possible net for retention.
And that makes a lot of sense. You're basically catering to the super consumers.
Mm.
And speaking of casting a wide net, the blueprint insists on diversifying your traffic streams too, like combining SEO, social media, and guest posting. Why is relying heavily on just one platform so dangerous?
Because it creates a single point of failure.
A single point of failure.
Yeah. If 100% of your traffic comes from one specific search or social media algorithm, your entire business can be wiped out overnight by a single update, an update that you have zero control over.
That is terrifying.
Yeah. It happens all the time. Diversifying your traffic streams is how you build structural resilience. And the only way to effectively manage those streams is by religiously tracking your data.
Analytics.
Yeah.
The time on page, bounce rates, traffic sources. This is where you kind of have to check your ego at the door, isn't it?
Precisely. Analytics replace ego with objective data.
Oof. Hard truth.
It is. If you write a piece that you are personally incredibly proud of, but the analytics show an 80% bounce rate within 5 seconds, you have to accept that the market rejected it.
Right. The numbers don't lie.
They really don't. Conversely, if a throwaway post you wrote in an hour suddenly gets 10 times your average traffic, you need to expand on that topic immediately. By finding out exactly which paragraphs cause readers to leave the page, you can surgically fix those weak spots.
So it's never really finished.
Exactly. Optimization is an endless data-driven cycle of hypothesis and validation.
It's almost incredibly freeing, you know, to just let the numbers dictate the strategy. But of course, traffic is still just data points on a screen. A blog only really transforms into an empire when you turn those numbers into an actual, fiercely loyal community.
Community is the ultimate goal.
Yeah, and the Pitcot source moves into interaction and adding value, operating heavily on the law of reciprocity. Like, you have to give before you ask.
Yeah.
Offering exclusive content, free guides, highly valuable templates.
Yes. And this leads directly to what the Blueprint considers the undisputed king of digital marketing, which is building an email list early. This is where real leverage exists.
Okay, let me play devil's advocate here for a second. Why not just focus all that energy on building a massive TikTok or Instagram following? Why email? It feels so old school.
Because you do not own your social media followers.
Wait, you don't?
No, you are merely renting access to them. And the landlord, the platform, can change the rules of the algorithm at any moment, suddenly hiding your content from the exact people who specifically asked to see it.
Wow, that's a harsh reality.
It is. But your email list is an independent asset that no algorithm on earth can touch. A small, highly engaged email list of, say, 2,000 people will consistently generate more revenue and deeper loyalty than a passive social media following of 50,000.
Because you're speaking directly into their inbox. It's a one-to-one conversation.
Exactly. It's intimate. And the true power really unlocks when you begin segmenting that list.
Segmenting. How so?
Well, as your audience grows, you use tags to separate them based on behavior. So new subscribers receive a welcoming sequence. Readers who click on advanced tutorials get tagged for deeper technical content. People who have actually purchased from you get VIP updates.
Oh, that's smart.
Yeah, that level of personalization makes every subscriber feel seen, which just skyrockets engagement.
That is brilliant. It's like digital hospitality. But, you know, you don't just have to grow entirely on your own either. The Pitcot Blueprint has this fantastic strategy for collaborations and cross-promotions. But I gotta be honest, it can feel incredibly intimidating to reach out to established creators.
Mm-hmm.
How does the Blueprint suggest actually approaching this?
The key is lateral networking.
Lateral networking.
Right. The Blueprint advises targeting creators who are roughly 10 times your size, not 1,000 times your size. If you have an audience of 100, do not cold pitch a collaboration to someone with 500,000 followers.
Right. They're probably just going to ignore that email.
Exactly. Pitch someone with 1,000. They are accessible, they are still actively grinding for growth, and the value exchange can be genuinely mutual.
That makes so much sense.
Yeah, you bring your unique expertise, they bring their slightly larger audience, and you co-create something like a webinar or a guest post.
I really love the pragmatism of lateral networking. It is just so much more grounded, and as you expand that network, the Blueprint encourages branching out. Taking your written content and adapting it into a YouTube video or perhaps a deep dive audio discussion like we're doing.
Yeah.
It's about personalizing the brand.
Yes. Authenticity is vital.
Sharing your weird habits, your struggles, your failures. Because ultimately, people follow people, not sterile perfection. You know, this entire community building phase, it reminds me of an elevated dinner party.
Oh, here comes another analogy. I'm ready.
Bear with me. You don't just stand at the head of the table shouting facts at your guests, right? You listen to their conversations, which is your data analytics. You serve them incredible appetizers, which are your high-value freebies. And you invite a fascinating co-host to elevate the evening, which is your lateral collaboration.
That is a genuinely wonderful analogy. I love that. And when that dinner party is a massive success and your community trusts you implicitly, you finally reach the pinnacle of the blueprint, professional polish and monetization.
The pinnacle?
Yes. This is where you ensure the digital architecture looks world-class, and you finally get paid for your expertise.
Right. And it starts with the visual design, right? The layout, the typography.
Yes. First impressions online are entirely aesthetic. Your design acts as your digital handshake.
A digital handshake.
Exactly. If your site looks cluttered or dated, the fluency heuristic we talked about kicks in negatively. Users subconsciously assume the information is also cluttered and dated. A clean, professional layout lowers immediate bounce rates and visually verifies your authority.
A firm, memorable digital handshake.
I like that.
And once that trust is visually and substantively established, we arrive at the Holy Grail. Monetization.
The fun part.
Ads, affiliate programs, selling your own digital courses. It is the absolute dream to get paid for your passion. But why can't I just throw up some banner ads on day one just to cover my hosting costs? I mean, surely people understand I have to pay the bills.
It's tempting, but the sequence of events is strictly unchangeable.
Unchangeable.
Yes. The formula is value leads to trust, and trust leads to income.
Value leads to trust. Trust leads to income.
Exactly. If you try to extract income-like through heavy ads or aggressive sales pitches before you have consistently provided value and built trust, you introduce massive friction. You will alienate your audience instantly.
Right. They'll just feel used.
Precisely. You have to build the foundational pillars of contribution first and then transition to extraction organically, balancing it carefully so you never, ever betray the audience that built your empire in the first place.
Value leads to trust. Trust leads to income. That is a sequence to permanently write on the whiteboard. Well, as we wrap up this deep dive into Pitcott's The Professional Blogger's Blueprint, the source leaves us with this lingering, really powerful truth. Every single successful creator, the ones currently making a living doing exactly what they love, they started exactly where you might be right now.
Completely uncertain.
Yes, uncertain. Navigating the technical friction. Maybe a little intimidated by the blank page, but they were willing to try. The only difference between them and someone who remains just a consumer is that they simply kept going. They built their ecosystem step by step, post by post.
It really is a marathon, not a sprint.
Absolutely. So I want to leave you with this final provocative thought. You have the blueprint. What is the one micro step you will take today to cross the threshold from being a passive consumer of content to becoming the architect of your own digital empire? Thank you for listening to the Pitcott Podcast. I will leave a link in the description below. Please subscribe to our channel if you haven't and activate the notification bell so you don't miss our new uploads. Press the like button and rate us if you love our show. It helps in the recommendation algorithm so others can access it too. Thank you for being there with us, and don't forget to click on the stars below to give us a rating.